I will make sure it's going.
Why are we doing that?
It's going to be part of the web. Okay, so this morning's class is entitled, and we'll come back to you in a minute, Miss Kimmy.
It's okay.
Today's class is Inconsistency and How to Raise a Yo-Yo. And believe me, I know your kids.
I have a yo-yo.
You have a yo-yo.
Takes
okay.
One to know one.
No, I'm one go. Joking. What was your question? You had a question about something?
I was going to say I had to leave early, but now it's on tape, so.
Okay, great. Hey, something that I think we should think about doing here. What's up with no food here? Come on, there's no coffee. If you guys want to make some.
There's cookies over there.
Yeah, there are some cookies. If anybody would like a cookie.
No, I can't.
Because I could go for some coffee, but I'm not running out to get it.
Well,
so.
Wait.
No, it's okay. All right. Chapter 2 talked about inconsistency. If I'm not mistaken, since I was not able to teach the second lesson that you had in class, Pat asked you to read over Chapter 2.
Yeah.
And to read it over, highlight it, to look at the questions at the back of the book. Because we know that page 32 is where the chapter begins, and then there were a group of questions in the back. If you had a chance to read it over, why don't we just talk a little bit about what were some of the specific things. What are the three different kinds of parents? Two extremes. What's the extreme parent is what?
Permissive.
Okay, permissive meaning what?
Letting them do kind of whatever they want.
Yeah, you want your kid to feel good, so you allow them to just do whatever you like them to do.
Authoritarian on the other.
On the extreme, authoritarian, which is what?
Controlling.
I will control everything you do. I will button your shirts when, he used example, I will button your shirts when you're 15. I will wipe your rear end when you're 12, you know, whatever. You know? Authoritarian, I am controlling your life. Boy, I forgot, this is taking.
Maybe they can edit that
I'm a little different than Mr. Walker. He's a little more Christ-like. I'm not. I just don't know how it really is. All right. And then what do you call down the middle that he suggests? What was the topic or the term he used?
Authoritative.
Authoritative. And anybody catch what that would mean? Authoritative would be what? I don't like to do this because I don't like to use chalk. And I cannot write with it very well.
Especially when you don't.
Yeah, I don't want to take a chance. My fingers are really having problems. I can't read it. So, authoritarian, permissive, but authoritative, which means you have the authority and you practice and use your authority as a parent. And you use your authority as a parent. You have to be tough when the times are tough. You could be a little permissive at times when you want your kids to make decisions which they're going to learn from. But it's a middle road. Now, I'll say this. There are other kinds of parents. In my ministry at St. Mark's, in my background education, and I always learned that there are sometimes people who are what we call helicopter moms. What does that mean? We've used that word in our Bible class. They hover over their kids, right? And then there's the drill sergeant type parent, and that's the strict authoritarian who are barking out orders how to get your kid to get in line. And of course, we know that from the author, Dr. Lehman, he obviously says, what's the problem with an authoritarian? Does it really bring happiness to your kids? We are all guilty of it. I've done it. I'm going to stand in front of you and say, I was an authoritarian parent at times with my kids. We've all done that. Why doesn't it work? Just quit. Why doesn't it work?
When Mark was growing up, he told me about this story a long time ago, and he had some neighbors that the dad was so hard on them that as soon as they were of age, they flew and stayed as far away from the home as possible.
Right.
It was like a prison term.
Okay,
and
so
they couldn't wait to get out.
All right. So they saw it simply as this was going to be under the thumb of somebody, and as soon as I got old enough to escape the thumb, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. Pam? Well, like Pastor said too, you can say, okay, you do that, you get them off the line, but you're not changing their heart. You're not making them want to choose the right course of action. There, they will because you make them do it, but you want to go a little deeper if you can. So.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right.
And they're not learning to make decisions for themselves.
All right. Absolutely. Sometimes decisions and consequences that come with giving kids those rights.
Right.
I'm going to come back to that. John, you want to say something?
Well, I was going to say, then they become the Eddie Haskell. They're the perfect person in the presence of an adult, and then it's a game. And as soon as they're outside of the, where they know mom or dad can't get them, then it becomes a game.
Right, and that's the point I was going to make next. You know, the authoritarian parent, as he says, it seems to work. Mm-hmm. Because you can control the kids when you're maybe with adults. You've gotten them so intimidated that this is how they're going to behave, that when you're with them in front of them, they are all smiling and nodding, and yes, I will do as you say. But as soon as they escape and they're not underneath your nose, they become hellions. Now, this is quite often the case what happens at school. When mom's not there, they become hellions for the teacher because mom's not there. And so when the teacher goes, what's going on with this kid? The teacher works with the parent or works with the kid. Come on, this is what you expect of you. And then finally the teacher calls the parent, says to the parent, hey, man, problems with your kid. And what happens at home? The kid gets more authoritarian. You will behave at school. You will do as. And it's not, I sometimes wonder, what's the motivation? Is it because I'm afraid now I have to come home because mom will find out? So the authoritarian parent, though there will be times when you're going to have to be the authority, as he says, in the authoritative sense. But to be only that type of parent does not work. It doesn't work. It doesn't really raise kids to be, in a sense, independent thinkers who are not afraid to try something, though there may be a consequence of their decision. They sometimes, then as they even get older, they will only look to you to tell them what to do, and that makes them become somewhat dependent on you, on everything they do. And I want you to know that I'm not speaking to you as the authority. I'm speaking to you as a parent who has done that as well, and it didn't work. And we found out very quickly it didn't work. Okay, it just didn't work. Let's go to the extreme now, permissive. Why do parents want to be permissive with their kids? What's the whole thinking behind that? What's the reasoning behind it?
Well, sometimes it's just easier to give in.
Okay.
Because then there's no conflict at the time.
Okay.
And you just want to be their friend, and you want them to be happy. And so for them to be happy, you just give them whatever they want.
Okay.
But that's very short-term thinking.
Yes, it is. And I think, to be honest with you, as Lehman says, permissiveness promotes rebellion. Because I don't believe kids do not want to be your best friend. They want you to be mom, they want you to be dad, and they do want a parameter. And they want to have the freedom to be able to try things that are appropriate for their level, and if they fail, you should be there to say, okay, it's all right, next time you'll learn maybe not to do that. But to be permissive and just have them free reign, I think that causes kids to be totally rebellious. Okay, other comments about the permissive parent? Anything else you learn from the reading, or just you know from your own experience? John, you don't have to raise your hand. Just say it, John.
Oh, okay. Well, I just think that some parents, they want to be loved by their children, and so they're afraid that if they come down hard on their children, won't love them. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think, too, in our litigious, bureaucratic society, there's a certain fear that if you punish your child or give them some consequence, that they'll pick up the phone and call Child Protective Services.
Has that happened?
Oh,
all the time. Yeah. It's happened here at St. Mark's, where kids have actually, in a divorce situation where the mother living in a different house has called on the ex-father, the ex, her husband, on Child Protective Services because they spanked her daughter and left a bruise. Or spanked and the daughter came and said, Dad, spank me, and that's not appropriate.
I think you mean where the kids call on the parents.
Well, too.
Yeah, or the kids themselves call on the parents. They report this is what's going on. Or they'll go to school and tell the teacher, and then the teacher, once you hear it, you realize teachers can't just say, well, that's too bad. If you hear it, you have to report it. That's by law. If you get caught not reporting, then I'm in trouble. You know, and so that's why we take seriously what kids say. We will follow up. We don't report it every time because sometimes it's maybe a kid trying to get an adult in trouble. Mm-hmm. But the idea of being permissive, the kids sometimes can intimidate adults into just allowing them to do everything they want to do, right? Okay. What else about permissiveness? Anything that strikes you?
Another thing is that you don't want to be left alone, you know? And you know.
What do you mean by that?
Just, have peace, you know, and don't get into anything.
Okay, so you're just willing to give in and say,
All
right, here, you can have this. Mm-hmm. All right. And you know what? Mm-hmm. If you come from an environment where you grew up, where your home was a lot of turmoil, when you have kids, you remember that, and therefore you want that peace in your house. So sometimes permissive parents just give away because they think that's the way they're going to keep the peace, mm-hmm. right? They think that.
Yeah.
Pam?
We said about perimeters. I like what he says here. Children want us to discipline them because the act of discipline shows them we care.
Yes. You're exactly right. And if you don't, and give the parameters of what they have.
Like the lines.
The lines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Even, I always jokingly say, some people like to think that in high school or junior high kids, they don't like parameters. They don't like lines drawn in the sand. But I found over the years that junior high kids really do like that. You just say, here's how much I'm going to take, and you're not to cross over that. Now, you'll see one kid come up and go.
then
you have to go and say,
yeah. Just waiting for you to do something.
And they're just waiting for you to do something. So you have to come and say, okay, we're going to talk. We're going to come and talk. And and I'm going to tell you, that's not going to happen again, you know. They do, because kids, no matter what age, feel secure knowing that there's a line that I have to come up to, and that's it, period, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, now I'm going to ask a personal question, and you guys can talk. If you looked at a permissive parent, before we go to the authoritative, permissive parent and an authoritarian parent, what would you say early on in raising kids were you?
Authoritarian.
Okay. How many of you had authoritarian parents? I did, right? And so, isn't it not true that sometimes we really mirror and do what our parents did to us? And that's I mean, I look at my parents and I don't want to go on Oprah with them and confront them or talk to them about all the problems that, you know, I have now because of scarred for life because of what you did. I really respect my parents because what they did was some good things. They were very authoritarian. And they were never permissive. That's one thing I only made. They were never permissive. Here's the door, do what you want. But they grew as they, and as all of us, we didn't get a manual how to raise these kids. And so you start out with how it was done to you, and then you learn as you grow. Now, John and Pam, John and I were classmates in college, and John has the experience of getting, he's a grandfather, he's got a child in kindergarten, so he's got lots of experience, Pam as well, in raising Matthew.
That's right? I'm having trouble breathing.
But the idea is that, John, you've had a lifetime in a sense, right? A whole generation of one child, how to work with Matthew, and it's true. I know what I did to my oldest, I learned not to do to my youngest. Because you just learned it, you know, it didn't work. Were any of you, or do any of you feel that one of your parents were permissive in raising you?
Were they all together?
Yeah, mom or dad?
Mom was a little more than dad.
Yeah. Really? Would that be because they compensated for the other strong parent, so mom was easier or dad was easier? Or were they both pretty on the, putting the hammer on you?
You had it just the other way around.
Well, I think I had an interesting, because I remember my parents were really strict, and so I didn't, you know, get to do things that other kids got to do until I was about 12 or 13, and then I got to do stuff that a lot of kids didn't get to do, you know, ride my bike.
Outside of the house?
Yeah, well, right. When I was in ninth grade, I ride my bike 70 miles up to Coloma, or when I was in Southern California, rode my bike to the beach.
You earned your mother's trust.
And so there was a point right where that I got to do things that I think a lot of kids didn't get to do, and mom never had a problem with me if I worked late at night, or, you know, just tell us when you're going to be home. I said, I'm going to be home at 3 in the morning. It's okay.
And if you followed through on that and they trusted you, that they would give you that freedom.
Right. I mean, and I used to be in car rallies in high school where I'd get home at 3 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, but at 8 o'clock service, I would be with usher. And so I was, I didn't have a problem. You know, they said, you just make it to church. Okay. And so then if I felt tired in the afternoon, I'd take a nap or go to bed.
I don't think he ever got a spanking in his life. I mean, he was just a compliant child.
So. That's awesome. I mean, that could be a good thing.
Not that I didn't deserve one.
Yeah. And not that you didn't deserve, because you know some of the things you did that don't caught you, John, right? Well, here's the bottom line. I always think of, okay, you got these two parenting styles, and you all recognize that sometimes or another you are probably more authoritarian than you are permissive. I think we see some permissiveness come into parenting when kids get older, because kids start thinking like adults, miniature adults. Right now, they're easy to control if they're young. You're still bigger than them. You can look down at them. You can say, I'm going to take this away from you and put it on the refrigerator, and they're not going to be able to get it. But as they become teenagers and they begin to think of many adults, they start figuring you out. So therefore, that's sometimes when parents shift to being a little more permissive. Okay, now, in order to keep them around and have them love me and like me, I gotta give them things.
And that's why the author says raising a yo-yo, because that's basically, it's just like, you don't know what you're doing. The kid doesn't know, now, how do I approach my parents today? Because I'm not sure what kind of response I'm going to get out of them. The authoritative reality discipline, a common sense approach to raising your kids, is what authoritative is. You are still the parent. Lehman speaks about that. Why don't you look at your books for a minute on page, says where he says, there is a middle ground. Go to page 42. 42 has 2 points. And if you go at the very bottom of the page, number one, and then there's one on top of number two. But I'd like you to go up two paragraphs where it says, in chapter four, I will be expanding on how to use the allowance. Go right above that to about two sentences above it where it says, good discipline is always based upon the reality of the situation. What does that mean? Discipline is based on the reality of the discipline. Of the reality of the situation, excuse me. What does that mean?
Say they left their bicycle out and got stolen, got messed up. The reality is you don't have the bicycle. Or you.
Okay, that's a consequence. Okay. A little different.
Remember,
discipline is to, you're trying to teach your kids something through discipline. Reality of the situation.
Something, I don't know if this would apply, but yesterday at lunch, one of their favorite things to have for lunch is squiggly noodle soup.
Okay.
And sometimes I'll make it special and I'll add some frozen peas or corn.
Uh-huh. So
that's really, I know, oh boy, they're excited. They really are.
That's awesome.
And so I made it yesterday since they were home for school. And so AG's like, oh, I smell squiggly noodle soup. Is that it? And I go, yeah. I said, I made squiggly noodle soup supreme. And then Wesley comes over and he was sort of in a foul mood. And he goes, kind of under his breath, but loud enough, goes, doesn't look supreme to me. So he didn't get any squiggly noodle soup supreme for lunch. I took his bowl and I dumped it right back in the pot. And of course he's screaming, no, I'm sorry.
You're tough.
You know what? That's the consequence of the situation.
That's the discipline you were going to give. Now, what happened afterwards?
He was very sorry.
What did you do after that? Did you go and say, do you understand why this is happening? Did you explain to him? Without giving a long dissertation,
right,
here's what's happening. Boom.
Yeah, I tried to keep it short. I tried not to have any attitude in there. It was difficult. I admit there was... I slaved on this. No. I said, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you that you don't get to have one of your favorite things. But when you are complaining and when you're bad-mouthing the food, then you don't get to, and this is a history. They know all about that because they've gone without stuff. When they've bad-mouthed
before. Yeah, right. And that's one of your rules in your house. You don't say things under your breath or make a comment about mom's whatever.
That's right. Then they go hungry.
It probably depends on the age, too. But if Matthew comes, I'll say, oh, excuse me, would you like to rephrase that? No.
Does he?
Yeah.
Does he rephrase? He's figured that out quickly.
Yeah, so I'd rather try that before I...
Well, this is not the first time.
You've had that this time.
Well, there's other times. And he has had warnings.
Here's how I would explain a bad way with reality situation, okay? Discipline. They have done something that has irked them, and you say, now you are banned from the TV for a week. I just laugh when I hear parents say that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, for a week. Okay, who's going to be sitting around? I mean, I've seen some parents do this. Literally, I plug the TV and take it to another room. Good for you if you can do that. But the reality is, after about 3 days, because I've said it, I'm right there with all these, you know, within a few days, suddenly the TV's on, the kids sitting there watching TV. Or I hear parents say, if you do this, you're going to be banned for a month. Who wants to spend a month making sure the kid's banned from riding his bike? See, the reality situation says, be logical with what you're saying to your kids. Be authoritative, be the one that sets the rules, but be realistic in what you're really saying.
Oh yeah, well, for a five-year-old, he went in and turns on the computer before he's ready for school, and I had told him not to do that.
Yeah.
I said, okay, that's it. I forgot what I did. Was the rest of the day or the rest of the
day? Yeah, rest of the day, whatever.
Day, you know, for five, and then you just killed him, but he doesn't do that anymore.
That's right.
So he won't run.
And I think that, again, is true. What is age appropriate?
Right. Yeah.
Have you ever heard the parents say you're grounded for a month? And I always laugh at it. Oh, gosh, that means you got to be around me for a whole month. I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
But, you know, some parents are pretty firm on that. They can handle it. They mean what they say, and they say what they mean.
It's fit the crime.
Mm-hmm. Right? At the bottom of the page, then, it says, at the bottom of page 42, there are 2 points that he makes that are key for the authoritative parents who are using authoritative discipline. Number one, discipline by way of action. And I'm going to read that. The discipline should be swift, direct. In the case of Michelle, swift. It was direct. It was effective because he didn't like what happened.
Right.
And closely tied to the violation of the family rule. Now, you may have a family rule. In my house, if I got caught criticizing what my mother made, you didn't eat it. And it wasn't because I chose not to eat it. It's because she took it away from you.
Did you get anything else to eat?
Yeah, sure. But if I came and made a comment about...
oh, that's gross or whatever.
I don't want to eat that. Right? Oh, that looks very good. My mom said, fine. And then she'd say, oh. So then we'd have everything but what was on the plate. I mean, like, we'd get peas, maybe, or some bread, because that's what we have with our meals. But the main course wasn't given to you because you made a comment. And my dad, he was an authoritarian. He was an owner of a big business, and he was used to, you know, dictating down. But that was just a rule. We said, we don't disrespect mom that way. And we've done the same thing with our kids. If you disrespect mom about what she's made, you know, you're not going to get that then. And you'll make them stop and think before they run off. Now, that's just one area of parenting, but in this case, he says, family rule is possible. An example is what we have just talked about. When a toy is broken, it should not be replaced, paid for, amended. He talks about, you know, oh no, he broke, your son is over to someone's house and they broke a toy. Is it your job to go out and replace the toy? Well, I guess I would say, yeah, I'm going to try to replace it because it wasn't.
If your kid doesn't have any money, it is.
But then you've got to figure out how am I going to do this? Then the kid's going to figure out what? Yeah. What do you want your kid to do?
Some jobs or something.
Yeah, you give him something that says, this is why you're working, or this is why you're going out and, you know, whatever little jobs you have, because he needs to know that you broke something and it's not to be paid for. That's okay. And that's what Lehman means by discipline by way of action. And then the second point, parents must listen to their kids. And I think sometimes we don't do that very well. It says, there is a great power in listening, but few of us tap that source of power. It's just too easy not to listen to our children, to our spouses, to just about anyone. Or when we do try to hear what they say, we're really not listening at a feeling level, and that's key, at a feeling level, trying to understand them, empathy for what they're saying, and that means we're really not listening at all. Okay? When there has been something happening and your kid is trying to tell you, sometimes when we're in a rage about it and we're really ticked, it's sometimes simply, I've always thought to just send them into the room for a bit while you calm down, and they maybe not calm down, but you got to get into a mode that says, okay, I'm not happy with what's happened as the parent, but I want to hear what you have to say to me, and then I'm going to very rationally say, that's unacceptable. We're not going to have that in our house. Or that's not the way you behave with the neighbor kid next door. Or that's not the way you behave to your brother, or to your father, or to the rules in our house. But what do we normally do? In the moment of time, we uncork. He thinks, when I try to explain, maybe she's going to uncork, and or he's going to uncork, and there's no way to get him to hear me what I'm trying to say. Now, I'm not sitting up here again. I did not do this perfectly, believe me. But we found for myself and from some of the parenting that I've read, and I felt was really good to put the child away just for a few minutes. Not long, before he falls asleep and you forget what you're all angry about. But give yourself some time, a little bit of distance between, and then go back in as the authoritative parent to sit down and talk. What did you like about it? Are you a reactionary parent? Do you react at the moment? Right? Go ahead, John. Wait, you can say something or no? But the idea is, many of us, we want to react. And you know what? I think of stay-at-home mom. Sarah, you're home with Caleb all day long.
Yep.
And I'm sure as soon as Vicar comes through the door, she's going,
he is.
Here he is.
Or Caleb's waiting by the door. Yeah.
But I think when you are at home with children and you've got all these things underfoot all the time, you know what? You do it. You tend to react very quickly. And so I just happen to think that sometimes you need to listen to what your kids are saying. And maybe the best time to do that is give them some space. And you take some space, a little bit of time, and then go back in. And then don't forget about it, but go back and then say, now we need to talk about this. And if he's still out of control or still completely flipped out, but you have to judge that. You know your kids better than anybody else. Find the time to say, okay, we're going to talk. And then not be permissive and say, oh, aren't you the poor baby? I'm sorry I yelled at you or we did this. but now you can talk authoritatively.
You mean you should never tell them, I'm sorry I yelled at you?
Yeah, yeah, you can say you're sorry, but you know what I think you need to do? You need to met out the discipline first. You need to say, here's what's happening. And you know what, and I'm sorry, at the very end, here, you still, you broke this toy or you broke the neighbor's window and we're not happy with that. And that's something that we're not gonna have, you know, we're just gonna have you come and not think it's a big deal. It is a big deal. Now, I'm sorry I lost control, or I'm sorry I yelled at you and maybe hurt your feelings, but you know what? That's gonna happen sometimes. I always tell my kids, and my own kids are still, they still mock me with it. I always say, I'm a human being just like you. And blood runs through my body just like you. And sometimes I don't do it right. But I'm still your parent, and I'm gonna ask you to think about what I'm gonna tell you. It's gonna be this way. React to anything I've said so far. Any comments or thoughts? It's not easy.
Just the rest of what he says on page 43.
Absolutely. 43, he goes right through the whole story there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's saying one thing and the little girl's thinking completely
differently. Yeah, not communicating, right? And so maybe there was a reason why something happened in your home, okay? And you're not even listening to what your kid's trying to say, so maybe by just you calming down, by getting, and then he calms down, okay, now let's talk, what happened? And you know what I think it teaches kids? When you get your child to talk to you, that when they become teenagers, if they're in the habit of knowing that you will come back, and you will come back, and I always think this is another key thing. When you talk to your kids about things that are upsetting you, talk to them in their room, maybe sitting on their bed, or sitting on the floor while they sit on their bed. Come to where they are. You know, my dad always made me sit on a stool when he was unhappy. And I still have the stool, it's in Cindy's classroom. My dad gave it to me and he said, don't you ever use this stool the way I used it. See, because my dad understood that. I think it's important that you go to the kids and say, okay, now listen. You know, I'm unhappy and here's what's gonna happen. Here's the result. And I'm sorry how I may have yelled at you, but this is what's gonna take place. And you may find out when you go to their kids' room that there's something why it took place. Maybe no excuse for what took place, but maybe there's something behind it. So let me give them that chance to talk to you. When you're angry at Stephen, where do you talk to him? What do you do with Stephen when you're angry with him?
I lose my cool.
Okay.
Not every time, but...
Okay, but so what would you say to Kim? What are some things that would work for her to stop losing her cool when she's upset?
Count to 10.
Okay.
Tell yourself not to meet the child at his yelling level.
Yeah, because you know what happens? We always talk about this way. Here's in psychology, we always talk about there's a parent and there's a child, right? Child. And quite often, you're supposed to look this way. You're the parent and you talk to your child. But quite often is you will stoop to being like a child and be
We're both yelling at each other,
right? You gotta remember who you are. Now that's easier said than done, and I'm not standing here again.
Absolutely.
We are not standing here as the experts in this.
Well, I sent him to his room, but then he is yakking the whole way down the hallway to his room.
Okay, that's fine. We shut the door and I need to relax.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't like the back talking. Sorry, it's me crazy.
Okay. Put him in his room if he's back talking. What would you suggest that she do after she's in the room? He's back talking, you're probably hanging on to him.
So he's mad now that I've sent him to his room and now he's...
And you're madder than a hornet because he's disrespecting you, be saying all that stuff.
Continuing down the hallway.
What do you do now? I'm not so sure.
So what would you say? Dorina, what would you do? That was Lucci.
I don't know, he's just... I think he's older, isn't he?
He's 7.
Oh, he's 7.
Oh, some time.
I don't know.
See, I personally, that was, our kids did that, and we had steps to climb to get into a bedroom. And I'd go, Adam, right up and say, you're in. Shut the door. And I could hear him in there, you're being mean to me.
Oh, that's what
you're
Stephen
darn tooting I'm being mean to you.
I am the meanest.
Our kids always tell me, we still say to Adam, you hurt my feelings.
Oh, yeah.
And whenever Adam, you know, 20, I still say, Adam, you're hurting my feelings. Dad, drop it.
Okay, so what would you do?
So what would you do? Okay. I would basically let him stay in there and stew for a bit. If you hear him still ranting and raving, I'd let him still till you don't hear much coming out of that room. Now, he may fall asleep or he may finally relax. And
he'll start playing with his stuff.
Which may be the case. But now maybe he's not as angry, or at least he's maybe not even thought about it, but he's not stewing. Then go in.
And tell him.
And say, Stephen, we need to talk. And Mom is not going to put up with that. See, what happens is, quite often we feel silly because we're talking to these kids. Get on the bed, we need to talk. But I think it starts at a very young age. If you have a relationship with your kids, you can talk to your kids about these things. I just think that if you don't, then they just simply learn that, you know, there are certain things that are gonna have you on cork, and then they just think, I can't talk to mom, so I'll find someone who I can talk to, and sometimes it's not the people you want them talking to. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you too, in my experience, a lot of kids have told me, I can't talk to my parents. And when you ask them why, because they are immediately jumped to a conclusion. And that's why you gotta allow them to talk to you, even if you don't agree with what they're saying. Even if they come up with the dumbest reasons why they just did what they just did. And then just be very calm and in control, but yet authoritative to say, well, I understand what you're saying to me is what you saw how it happened or what you think is okay, but it's not. And my rules are not, our house rules are not going to be that, whatever it happens to be. Pam?
Yeah, somewhere, I don't know who said it, to make sure that they know that you understand what they said, repeat it back to them or whatever.
Sure.
So that they know, yes, dad or mom did hear me. Mm. They understand.
I think it's good to we have this reflective hearing where you hear, you say what you just heard. I mean, I don't want to make this long psychobabble.
No, but
common sense says you should. Okay, did I hear this? This is what I heard you say. Mm-hmm.
Well, just like the misunderstanding over here, they're right together, but you can misunderstand.
And you want to know, you guys, this does not go away when they're 20.
No.
I'll give you an example. Our son in college, and I'm not telling stories, but we have kids the same age, so I'm going to share this. Adam has not gone to church for a couple weeks. And we always say house church, you know, and it happens to be a good friend of mine's a pastor there. So I can call him and say, hey, have you seen Adam? So we didn't, he told me that we hadn't seen Adam at church for a couple weeks ago. So I called Adam, I left the restaurant while we were sitting with the pastor, walked outside, called him from San Francisco, called him up saying, hey Adam, how's church? And he said, oh, I haven't been there. I said, you know, you know what you need to do about that, right? Okay. So yesterday, I said house church in an email. He was on the computer, so we were talking back and forth. He says, well, I was slept in last Sunday. It was Valentine's weekend. So they prompted me a letter to write to him as his father, simply saying all the things, not ripping him, not in anger, simply saying, I know what you know. And this morning, I got this long letter simply saying, Dad, you're right. You're right. It's more important than my friends. It's more important than, and I need to get this thing straightened out. So it prompted me to write one more time, you know, like, Dad's going to do this one more time. But it was he could tell that I was saying, what I was saying to him was authoritative in the sense that I, you know, there's no arguing about going to church. You need the relationship with the Lord. And the next step was, and now find a way to get to church. If you need help, I'll help you because I know the pastor. He'll get somebody to come down and get you. I could have been very angry and fired off a hot email, which he could have read all his thoughts and, but I could tell, I shared it with Cindy before I sent it. She said, that letter was so full of love for what him to do the right thing that I'm sure he started crying because Adam cries at a drop of the pen. And he does. Oh, yeah.
I'll take him.
You didn't hear that. But he does. But you know what? The point being is we cannot be afraid and shirk our responsibility as parents, even when they're 20. Right? 23. But we got to say it in a different way because they're now older. You know, I mean, they're adults. Johnny's an adult. Amy's an adult. Mm-hmm. Our kids, your kids, are still kids. Mm-hmm. You still have that responsibility. But don't give them mixed signals, one way or the other way. Be authoritative. And then the third point that he makes over on page 44 is that parents should give themselves to their children. What did you read? If you read this section, what does that mean?
Your time.
Mm-hmm. They just want to be with us.
Right. How often we sometimes forget that. He says in the book, giving of yourself, not things, to your children is an essential ingredient for effective discipline. Many parents apologize, what do I have to offer my children? I always respond, just give of yourself. Now, does that mean every waking moment you gotta be with your kid? Of course not. But when your kids know that you will be there for them when the time comes, or you just say, hey, let's go out and do something together, they will so greatly appreciate that, and they'll know that you're the person they can come to. Can I ask this, in your growing up, how many of you found that you would go to one parent as opposed to another parent if you wanted something?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Why is that? Why was that?
I'd go to my mom.
Why?
Because there's a fear of my father a lot, so...
Who did you spend more time talking to as a kid, mom or dad?
My mom. Because so, she, but then she would say, if it's okay with your dad, it's okay with me. So I that made me go to him. So.
Sarah?
My mom.
Mom. And you probably spent more time talking to your mom, right?
Yeah.
John?
My mom, because if mom said it was okay, I was going to get to do it. If dad, you know, if okay. dad said it was okay,
I
still have to go by mom.
Okay.
So I'm not going to go to the approval.
Would all of you say it was your mother?
No, it was my dad.
Really?
I was the youngest and I was the only girl. So I was daddy's girl.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So I'm sure I got a few things that my brothers didn't get.
Okay.
But it was mostly, I just loved being with him.
Okay.
When we would go up to Wisconsin at our summer cottage, I hated fishing, but I would sit for hours in the boat while my dad fished, and I would just listen to him telling stories.
There's a general thread that runs through all of it. Why would you go to the parent that you probably spent most time talking to? Because you knew them. They gave you some time, mm-hmm. whether it was a whole lot of time or a little bit, they gave you time.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore you felt comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always talked to my mother. My dad worked out of town and there were all boys in our house. And so it was very logical that mom would always ask how things were going at school. It wasn't always a lot of time, but you would go to her. I would not have talked to my father about anything because, I mean, he came home on the weekends. He was disciplined. He was get out and get the work done. So I wouldn't ask him. And that's what I think Layman is saying. If you give of yourself, then you will find.
Right. That changed with you, didn't it, over the years?
Oh, absolutely.
Somehow.
It changed. My father, when he became a Christian, realized that the techniques he had used on us, that his father had used on him and his sister, was not the right approach. You've heard me say this before. My father would have probably been put away for child abuse as kids. The crazy things that happened in our house. Mm-hmm. And my dad loved us, but he just thought that's the way you handle kids. You know, you're strict, you beat them, and you send them back out to shovel manure.
Mm-hmm.
For hours.
Yeah.
You know? Poor. Terrible. Oh, no, it wasn't poor. But I really think that if you give up your time, and those are, as an authoritative parent, you speak the truth, you're not afraid to call what has to be called. Mm-hmm. Give up your time. When there's, and even maybe just to give them time when there's nothing going on. Maybe you're really busy, but just take a break out of your time and say, how are you doing? Or would you like to have that book read to you or whatever? They will come back to you. Sarah, let me ask you a question. In growing up in your home, what did your dad do?
He worked at a bank and then he did insurance and investments.
So like in the evening?
Yeah, he was gone.
So he was gone off a lot. Yeah, quite often is the case. Okay. In your guy's home, do the kids come to Pam or come to you, Jen, when you're growing up? What do you think? When they come to you for wanting something?
Me.
Would they?
Unless it was something to do with car. After they got older.
Okay, sure, because dad
had all the
cars or money or something.
The more money it involved,
your kids aren't dumb. They know. Right, but maybe when they're younger because Pam was around all the time, you were working, and so they came naturally back to her to ask for things.
He was a bit of an authoritarian.
Okay.
Well, it's a little bit
and
of
the
fear
thing is, Pam's been home with the kids all the time, so they're around her all the time, and so it's just...
Mm-hmm. One of the blessings that the Lurville family has had is that you've been able to be at home. I always think that's so awesome because I know it can't possibly always have been really easy in day and age, but I always respect that in John and Pam because you were able to stay at home. You as well, right? Since I've known you, mm-hmm. at least you've always been at home, that's an incredible thing, right? It's an incredible thing that you can stay home with your children and raise them because they are the only things you got.
I still felt like I did a lot of things wrong.
But you know what? It's neat. We should never beat ourselves up for what we've done to our kids. Look at it this way. You got Matthew to do something differently.
You do it right this time.
Yeah, right? And you know what?
You do learn.
You will. You will learn. Absolutely.
And we'll be closer. We'll be closer than I ever will be with the others because he's the only one there.
Right. You have all the time to focus right on him where you had to be three before.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and the others are already jealous. But
I'm sure they are.
But I think you brought up a point that's really important. It's that you're never going to be perfect. And,
right.
And
something to learn all the time.
And the pop psychology of the last 10, 20 years is they always go back to, well, that one event that happened in your childhood.
That scarred you.
Yeah, and so as parents, you're going, gee, have I done something that now I've scarred my child for life?
Of course we have.
And
of course we have. We all have.
And so you can always beat yourself up, but I look at some of my older kids now have said things. When I go back and say, why did you do that? Why didn't you talk to me first? And they go, well, we knew you wouldn't like. I mean, they already knew that I wouldn't like it, that I would probably say no.
Yep.
They did it anyway, and yeah, you were right.
Sometimes, here's something I'll say. You have one son. You have two. You've got four, one. 12?
Two and a half.
No, the idea. I always wonder about when you have your own child. In a sense, you have an only child at home, right? Okay, and with Lucci. You know, there is something to say about having another child when you have, you can try all those things that maybe didn't do very well in the beginning with your first kid. You can try them over and you know, say, I can make better. I can do better. I often think that sometimes when you're alone, a child all by yourself, you get so much energy poured into you that you become the center of attention, and that's really hard when they go to school because they expect that every adult's gonna give me all the attention. And that's hard. It's really hard. You talk to kids about it, they don't like it. When I put my hand up, I expect a teacher to come over because if I had a question at home,
yeah, there's nobody else.
There's nobody vying for my attention. That's I'm gonna get it.
There's
right?
not 17 other kids.
Exactly right.
That's true.
So there's an extra, you know, that's a lot of work. You guys were dealing with this.
We're not having another baby.
Adopt six more children.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying that you should have more children. But I mean, that just puts extra pressure because when your child comes to school, you know, you have focused all your life on your son, the beautiful son that you have and wonderful young boy that he is. But sometimes when they go into a school setting, boy, it's a hard transition. It's like, wait a minute, you know? I got one teacher, and they have so many other kids you got to get their attention.
With other kids, he'll be saying something, and sometimes little kids don't always tune into you like a parent. Mm-hmm.
He's not listening to me.
Yeah.
He's not even listening to me.
Yeah. Or the
only parent says, "Stop that! You know."
Yeah.
Attention, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Or the only child thinks he can just kind of interrupt whoever he wants because you know there's nobody else I have to hold off on here. I can just interrupt you and tell you. That sometimes comes through, but that's just being the nature of having one kid versus a multiple family.
Well, that's why it's nice to bring them to Sunday school.
Absolutely.
The play groups and things like that.
What is kindergarten really about? It's about social interaction when they begin to learn. I mean, my wife would shoot me.
turn that off.
Yeah, right, turn off. But she would say, you know, there's a lot more to kindergarten than just social interaction. But really, when you think about it, when they first make this break from you as parents, they're going in there and learning how to interact, how to raise their hand. You've seen the poster, the most important thing they learned in life, I learned in kindergarten, right? I believe that. Mm-hmm. You know, how to say please, thank you, the like. Those are really important things.
That's why I took Luciano, and when he was three, I took him to gymnastics, you know?
Yes.
So he can get used to other kids
yes.
together.
And yeah, it's very good. Yeah. It's excellent. Yeah. Because then it gives you time away, and he needs to learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did any of you have any of your kids go to kindergarten the first year, and they just did not want to leave you, and they held on to you like, no, you're not leaving me alone with this strange woman.
They
were ready.
They went running.
I cried, and he was...
yeah, I know.
Right now,
it's so,
your wife.
Yeah, right.
It helped that they knew her. And
yeah, that's true. That's an advantage of being in a situation like this. Could you imagine going to like you know school? You don't even know the teachers that well. Here,
so
we
weird.
See each other on Sunday.
Yeah.
We see each other, and she's out talking to you, and you know so that really helps in the transition, of course.
Well, and then you build it up the whole year before. Guess what? Next year you'll get to be
you get to there.
Oh boy!
And I already know it. Those who are in the kindergarten right now, they're always talking about next year. You get to go to school all day, party.
That's right.
Right?
We're telling
you, crying again.
I
celebrated.
Sure.
I cried.
Oh. I was
so
sure.
It was too long, 7 hours.
That was long for you.
Oh my God.
Now tell me, when you grew up and went to school, how long did you go to school? Was it like 7 hours?
I guess you are.
Yeah, I think so.
6-7 hours.
Yeah, yeah. In China and in Asia, children who are like 6 and under go to school for 3 hours a day. That's it. But then they normally go to daycare because most parents are working. Mm-hmm. Or grandpa and grandma come and get them. It's very interesting because you'll see all the little kids leaving after, you think, man, school just started, but they're out the door back home. But yeah, it's just different cultural things like this.
This class is so nice. They all go to school together, and I think just about all of them go to Sunday school together.
Yeah, they're very faithful.
Just about,
yeah.
Just
in their own church, isn't it? Kindergarten class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's turn to page 250. 250 had a group of questions, and Mr. Walker mentioned that he had down at least some thoughts that there were some questions there. Maybe, come back a page 249. I want to respond to something in the text. There was one there that I thought was interesting. It says, how do you react to the text quotations below? From page 34, let's just react to this one. If you want disaster and chaos in your life, do everything for your children. Why is that? Why does chaos and why does disaster come if you do everything for your child? I mean, there's no wrong answer, you guys. So.
Can't phrase it right.
It's like wearing a cast all the time. Your leg becomes weaker and weaker and weaker if you never take the cast.
All right, that's a great analogy. That's excellent.
The kids will never learn to do anything for themselves.
Okay. So if you're always there picking up behind them, and, you know, I'm a neat freak. I got to have everything in my house put away. And, you know, we have toys. And as a kid, I was like, okay, I got these toys put away. And finally, he says, why are you doing that? You know, the boys need to take that responsibility. And so we'd say, okay, so there was always, end of the day, okay, let's pick up. And they did, you know. But it does turn to chaos because basically if you do everything, then they get older, they expect you to always do it. And when you don't do it, what happens? Rebellion. What? You're not going to do it? Do you allow Lucci to go in the kitchen and make a sandwich if you want something to eat? Or make any food?
No, I didn't.
Not yet. Is that because he's a second grader?
Do any of you,
like, can AJ go in if he wants to and make something, like a peanut butter sandwich?
Sometimes I have him make their sandwiches, like if we're running short on time or something in the morning, they can make their own deli sandwiches. They can make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Okay.
But he's never, like if it's snack time and he wants something, I guess I would rather do it. You know, if I want him to get something, I'll say, go ahead and get this out or get that out.
Okay. I mean, you're giving him freedom to do things, you allow him to do those things, right?
But he's not allowed to open up and just start eating stuff whenever he feels like it.
Okay.
No.
Steve,
how old is he?
Third grade.
Third graders. Kindergarten, how about?
He prides himself. He'll always ask for what it is, but just getting it himself, or mixing the chocolate and the milk himself, or pulling the chair up and getting something else.
Yeah.
They shouldn't just be allowed. To.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Especially they're pretty young. I mean,
I get that myself.
But I can imagine if this is terrible. My mother doesn't do it with us, but I've noticed as my mother's gotten older, she's gonna be 80. My dad sits in a chair and says, well, I'm really hungry. Would you like a sandwich? That's different than kids, right?
That's okay for me.
Very sad. Oh, my word.
They could be just being sweet to him once in a while. As long as they know how to do it.
But I always said, Dad, you got two legs. I know one's bad, but get up and get it yourself. And he's from that generation. Well, you know, the woman's place is to make me a sandwich.
You gotta leave that one.
Because he was used like that, you know, from the beginning.
So in my generation, you know, I would not think, hey, I mean, my wife will do it for me if I ask her, hey, can you make me a sandwich? She would do it. But if I came every day and said, here, make me a sandwich, I'm a hungry woman, she'd say,
that's different.
Fly a kite.
You don't want the everybody loves Raymond kind of approach going on, but if they just appreciate it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing something nice, right?
That's all right.
That's right. I agree, Pam. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. My mother-in-law is so funny. With having 9 children in Mark's family, he was in the middle, and I swear, and I tell him all the time that I got the pick of the litter, because she taught the boys how to cook and how to clean and how to do everything. Uh-huh. And for some reason, I don't know what it was, but he picked it up, I think, better than the others. And when I was dating him and I would go to visit and stuff, I think I asked him to get me something, and she goes, Michelle, come here. This cabinet has all the cups. This is the drawer with the silverware. And she goes, feel free. Don't ask for anything. Just help yourself.
Hint, hint.
But she did it in a very nice way. And then I realized, it's like, so I don't just get to sit back and have somebody wait on me.
Well, don't you think that's more of her saying, be comfortable in my home?
I think there's
two things going on. Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. I think that's fair.
You don't have my mark. You didn't give you anything.
it was just funny looking back at that.
Sure. But we think about, as your kids get older, and I always think of the teen years are the years that I think become really the big challenge, or maybe even early adolescence. If they are used to you doing everything, then they begin to think again, like they begin in their cognitive sense, begin to think, I can tell my mom I want this, and do it.
Depends on the personality of the child. Both our boys wanted to get in the kitchen and do, I'll do that, I want to make this, probably because I didn't cook very well, but they would make things themselves. Mom, I could do that myself.
That's awesome.
You know,
that's what you want to see.
I wanted to do it myself, so.
All right, let's at the next quote, page 39. My years of counseling parents and children have shown me that in a permissive environment, the kids rebel. They rebel because they feel anger and hatred toward their parents for a lack of guidelines and a limit setting. Children want order in their lives. Agree or disagree? Mm-hmm. Limit. John?
I think part of it, though, is they just look at their parents as pushovers and weaklings and I think they just kind of lose their respect for their parents. They're like, hey, you can just walk all over them and I just get out. And when I've gotten everything out of them
Then I can leave them.
Yeah, just
walk away from
waste
them.
Waste my time.
Set limits. Mm-hmm. Set parameters. All kids want it. High school kids want it. Junior high kids want it. Babies even want it. It's hard, but you got to do it.
Especially 7th and 8th grade, when you haven't had any other.
Yeah.
Me, with my boy, my siblings were.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know what.
Yeah. Sarah, did you have limits in your home?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty big time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Who was the disciplinarian, mom or dad?
Dad.
How many siblings, I'm curious?
Just me and my brother. But, you know, we had a lot of limits when we were younger, but then when we got to high school, a lot of those back off. We didn't have curfew and things like that in high school. We just knew, you know, you call, you check in, and that was it. And all our friends were like, you guys don't have to be home. And we're like, no. And just say who we're going to, where we're going, and our parents just trusted us.
If you're just responsible and you never gave them any reason, otherwise we could give Michael a lot bigger leash.
And I think there's something true, Pam, what you said earlier, that every kid has a different personality in how you deal with them. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a general guideline across the board, though.
Mm-hmm.
Limits that you set as a family, as house rules, this is what we're going to do.
Especially when the siblings are close together.
Absolutely, because they see that as being unfair real quick. Mm-hmm. All right, now flip over. Go to the next, there's 10 questions there, and I highlighted three of them that I thought would be of value. Number 5, 7, and 8. And if there's one of them that you want to discuss, feel free. But number 5, how do children learn to make a decision? Learn to be responsible and accountable. How well are you at your own kids doing in these areas? Okay, decisions. What's the last decision you gave your kid? Sarah, think about it. When's the last decision you gave to Caleb? Well, it starts really with at his age, but it's probably not necessarily. Can you think of one?
He decided to sleep.
I had to take did he want his grape juice or his apple juice?
All right. Okay, and he can tell he differentiated.
Oh, yes.
Anybody else? What's the last decision you had allowed your kid to make?
The same thing. Food choices are
Dorina. She's like, I give my kid no decisions.
Oh, yeah. He got to choose his punishment.
Oh, my word. Really? There, you can set that. You should say, here's what's going to be. All right.
Well, it was his father, really.
All right.
I gave him 3 choices, so he had to choose one.
Okay. Decisions. You know? Decisions, I think, are really key, too. I mean, he talks about this. Letting them make decisions that aren't going to hurt them. You know, decisions that aren't going to be really inconsequential.
And Cindy's helped him with that. Like, her words come out of his mouth all the time. You can choose this and that, Mommy. You want to choose this on the computer. He'll ask me, you know, all this thing about choosing.
Yeah. And there's not a choice. The choice is maybe not to pick, but you need to choose this, or this. And Cindy's always says in kindergarten, she always makes them try something. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. Just try it. And that may mean just touching it to the lip, okay? That's better to say, I'm not going to do that, because I don't like that. But she'll at least touch it. Okay, you tried.
But we don't want hot lunch ever again.
Yeah.
You may need to eat a vegetable. Oh, geez. Make vegetables on the plate.
When you learn to make decisions at an early age with kids, and you teach them that, how does that make them more accountable as they grow up? John?
They realize the consequence of their decision. Okay. Like last night, Matthew said, well, let's go play with trains. Oh, and let's do the computer. And I said, well, we can do the computer or the trains. Well, no, we don't have time to do both.
Exactly.
So we did the computer game together. And then when it was all done, came down later. Now can we do the trains?
No.
I'm learning not to have so many tears about it, though.
Thinking it
processes thinking. So you see, well, tomorrow. Dad will be home tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah. That's true. And then they get teary-eyed because they want to do it all.
They do, yeah. Right. I'm not getting...
Um, your kids ever leave their bikes out all night, have stolen?
Not stolen. One time AJ left it out like a week ago. It was nice, and I think he thought he was going to go back out. Mm-hmm. But it was getting late, too close to dinner, and he must have just forgotten. I closed the garage door. I couldn't see that it was there, and it was left out all night and had dew and everything. And luckily, nobody had stolen it.
Yeah.
But that was the only time that we've ever had an issue so far.
Okay, with a bad decision. I think our kids have always had things taken. They'll play basketball, and leave the basketball by the hoop, and leave, and somebody in the neighborhood walks by and take the basketball, and they're gone. And we always say, well, it's a decision, guys. You can be upset, but you made a decision that was not a very good one. Now, these kids were in fifth, sixth, seventh grade. These were not like your age kids. They were older, but it's a decision. You could leave it out, and you know what? I can drive home from church late at night and see it sitting there, and I could be a good dad, and I usually was, saying, okay, hey, guys, you left your basketball out. I put it in. But if you choose to leave it out there and dad doesn't see it, and maybe one time dad doesn't decide to pick it up and it's gone the next day, the accountability factor says you dropped it.
But should you remind them if they forgot about it?
I think there's nothing wrong with saying.
You can't remind them.
Yeah.
Go and get it. Okay?
Yeah. Hey, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they don't do it,
yeah.
And but it may pain you because you paid for that basketball. Yeah.
But after the third or fourth reminder, I would stop reminding and let the natural consequences happen.
Take place.
It's the same incident all the time. And then they get to buy the next basketball.
Yeah. And they save their money or they do things around the house. To earn that.
But they talk about it takes, 23 days to learn a habit.
Yeah.
Sometimes you start teaching your children habits like, okay, when you come in, let's do a check. Make them get used to doing a little checklist. Right. Did you check for this and that? Go out and look. Just like every night before I go to bed, I go out and make sure the garage door really is still closed.
Yeah,
And then I turn the light off. And so you can... And then that's a non-threatening one. Just teach them a routine where they do a little self-check.
Be responsible for.
And then that way, they just get in the habit. They just kind of like, oh, they're okay, done, and not even give it a thought.
Do you have a rule?
2 or 3 days, right?
No, 23.
23?
Oh.
Yeah.
So to develop a new habit, okay. It takes 21 days.
But then just make it a non-threatening. They have it, so it's... You're not having to remind them that they did something wrong before and their nose isn't being rubbed in it and stuff. Mm-hmm. But what it is, it's just, hey, so just so we don't ever forget something again, and this is what I do every night, kind of say, I do this little routine and I found it helpful because I don't forget this, I don't do that, and I don't,
sure.
It helps, I remember this, and it's great.
Our oldest son used to fight him like, he would tell him, write a list, make a list, do a budget, do it. He's never, I don't need a list for anything. Now he's 25, he's at home, he sits with his computer and he has his
list. Checks it all off, right? Thank God maturity is a wonderful thing, right? Okay. I mean, it is. It's, you live long enough to see them at least.
Well, near maturity.
We're
right?
Waiting for a couple of other points to come to
you. How many of you have in your home, when it comes to being the type of parent that you are, have simple, concise rules, maybe 3 rules in your house about how you want your house to be run?
Three
little things?
Could be. 3 simple rules. See, here, when we as teachers, one of the things they say is, I've been in classrooms where teachers have rules all over the wall. Mm-hmm. It's like, when I was a principal, I'd say, get rid of those rules. Have 3 simple rules. Respect, or maybe no more than 5 of what I expect in a classroom. And then uphold those rules. In our house, we had some simple rules about things being put away at night. We didn't want, and sometimes it didn't happen. Maybe it was a birthday party. And of course, that gets taken care of. We say, okay, that's okay. But for general rules in our house, we would simply say, we need you to do these things. And if you didn't do those things, we'd say, and guess what? There's going to be hell to pay if you don't do it. We didn't do it that way. We'd say, well, we're going to remind you. It's a learning process. It's a decision you have. Remember, before you go to bed, look downstairs. Are there things that you should have put away?
The light's off.
Right. Are those toys back up in your bedroom?
We told them, if toys are on the floor, you can't. If we had a fire at night, everybody break their neck trying to get out.
Slide down the steps.
That's what he tells them.
Or coming down steps, toys left on the stairs. I don't want to do that.
He does not leave toys. We barely have that problem anymore.
Make them being accountable for those things. Number 7. When was the last time you held your child accountable for reality with real life consequences? As Dr. Lou, maybe we talked a little bit about that. Like, for instance, leaving the basketball outside or leaving your bike outside. Or you leave something in the back seat of the car and, the car's unlocked, someone gets in and takes it. What really ticks your kids off with your kids? Something happened where something was taken and really upset Stephen, but you said, I told you, I've told you. Anything?
Not that I can think of. Not that top.
See, some of your kids are so young yet that mm-hmm. I think the reality really happens to get a little bit older. Mm-hmm. Then they really begin to think, well, I can go and do this and no one will take this. And boy, it's gone. But the reality is, I think real life consequences are learning tools. Anybody ever have a real life consequence in your own personal life when you were growing up? Where a consequence, something happened as a result of your behavior and it was a real learning tool?
Scared of what would happen. I never did anything.
My father was very strict on when he was home. He was very strict about where we would be going, like to parties. And my dad always said, "What party are you going to?" So we'd tell him. And we would tell him. And then we did go to a certain party, but then afterwards we went to another party. And he found out that the party we had said we were at, the police had come. And we came in home from, you know, out, and he was waiting up. He said, "So, did the police come?" And of course, we had been at that party, but we knew what was going on there. We could better get out of here. So we left. And, you know, we said, no, we didn't stay. We didn't know the police came. And then, of course, the grill came.
And where'd you go after that?
And basically, the consequence was, I think he mistrusted us, my brother and I, and that we were lying. And again, the consequence, or at least for me, I always learned. Tell the truth right up front. Don't try to make it look like something other than that, but tell him what he needs to know and you know, be honest, because then you'll gain that respect much better. The consequences are much worse if you come right up front and say, "No, I wasn't there, I didn't see that," or whatever. That reminds me much of my father. He was pretty much he would sit in this chair and just sit there. He'd read, you know, crossword puzzles, and then he'd walk in, he'd put his glasses down.
Okay.
He took his glasses off. That meant come sit down.
Or he had to like a look, you know, look at you that way, you know, then you knew.
My dad had my father was like John F. Kennedy when he was younger. He had the kind of same shaped head and same dark hair. And we'd always sit him and say, we always kind of joke about that, not to his face. The president's up, you know, we'd say jokingly. Good. All right, number 8. What were the differences between hearing your children and listening to them? Parents do a good job sometimes hearing, but they don't do a good job of listening. You hear your kids all the time. Kim said she hears her son rip, gritch all the time.
We're not tuning in and really.
Yeah.
Really hear.
Right? And Lehman says how important that is to listen to your kids.
Well, they aren't mature enough really to completely express what they're feeling.
Exactly.
So reacting to what they're saying. You may have an appropriate reaction to what they're saying, but what they're saying isn't what they're not expressing themselves right. properly, and so your reaction.
Sarah Korthals is a better listener today as a mother of a young child. You know, any peep comes out of Caleb, she's. Well, yeah, I heard that, but now comes Lucci. You remember when Lucci was a baby, and every little peep you picked him up, and what's wrong? And now he may be bam, 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 and you're like, okay, click, turn him off. And he's trying to tell you something, and you're click, don't have to hear that, you know? Because when they're infants, they're so dependent on us, we're hearing everything. But then they get a little older, and now they sound like a broken record, telling the same thing over and over again. And that's why you got to be able to be a good listener and a good hearer. And it takes effort to do that, to be an effective parent. And none of us have done it right, believe me. None of us. Kim, if you thought coming to this class was going to be all the right answers, it's not.
Well,
but you
got to
be aware.
Erin is our chatterbox.
Yeah.
Time she gets up until she goes to bed. Mommy or daddy, whatever it is. It could be about anything. She's talking. So sometimes we play the quiet game.
Sure.
Does that mean?
No.
That's even worse.
Do you think it's mean to say sometimes it's just time to be quiet?
Well, she just loves to talk.
Yeah. No.
And it's. Things are good. It's just sometimes she'll talk about, "Oh, is that tree over there?" And you know, it's like, "Oh, no."
I think it's okay just to say, you know, if it's just nonsense, kind of, you know, non-important stuff, you can just say, "Well," and I've done this with Wesley because he is the same chatterbox. You know, I just, you know, and it's tiring, and especially if I have to do something else, I know I can't be a very good listener to him when I'm trying to get dinner going, and then I'll just say. honey, I need to get dinner going. Will you tell me that when I'm done?
Yeah.
Go play. You know, or something, or but it's hard when they don't stop.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and then he'll still keep talking all the way back to the table when he goes to play with Clay. Thank goodness for Clay, because he could play with that 24 hours a day.
I always thought
talk things out.
In growing up in my household, and I still say even with our own kids in growing up, the best time for table talk was sitting at the table, dinner. Man, I tell you, we heard more things, and even the boys talking between themselves about things. We're going, did you hear that? And we're up, I'm helping getting things or something in the kitchen, and we would sit and just back and forth, and learned a lot. And our kids remember that. They remember sitting around the table talking. And quite often we'd be done with dinner and we're still talking. You know, it got hectic as, of course, high school years came, because kids were out the door. We didn't always have dinner always together because of schedules, but I think that's just a key thing. It's really important. So, okay? Well, that's it. This is a lively group.
Thank you for your
pen. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to steal them. I'm, whoops.